Hey, you're listening to the Creative Pep Talk Podcast. We help you build a thriving creative practice. I'm your host, Andy J. Pizza. Go to creativepeptalk.com/newsletter and subscribe so you never miss an episode and you're able to make consistent creative progress each and every week. Now let's get into this episode. Quick shout out to the sponsors, Study Graphic Design is what I was trying to say, with Shillington for 3 months, full-time or 9 months part-time. With Shillington's graphic design course, you'll graduate with a solid understanding of creative problem-solving, design theory, and software, create an incredible design portfolio, and master how to discuss and sell your work. These are essential skills for every creative career. Go to shillo.design/pep to learn more. There's nothing better than getting better. Accomplishing growth is extremely satisfying, and online classes from Skillshare make that possible. Learn about illustration, design, photography, productivity, and more, including what? Writing? Yes, with Skillshare short classes, you can move your creative journey forward without putting your life on hold. I was just checking out a class by Hanif Abdur-Raqib. This man is a writer who I just started his latest book. It has gorgeous language. It moved me almost to tears already within the first chapter. And he's got a new class called Writing for Expression, How to Make Your Words More Artful and Lyrical. He knows how to do this. Go check it out, skillshare.com/creativepep for 2 free weeks. Go take the class right now, skillshare.com/creativepep. Video is one of the most effective ways to stand out as a creator these days. And with Storyblocks, you can take your video and your audio game to the next level with affordable subscriptions, unlimited downloads through the unlimited all-access plan, and over 1 million royalty-free assets. You can level up your content at storyblocks.com/creativepeptalk. Hey, today on the show, we have Barry Lee. Barry Lee is an illustrator, muralist, and storyteller based in Atlanta, Georgia. And I have just been so inspired by Barry's work. Barry shows up on Instagram regularly with gorgeous illustration. But what really has inspired me is the heart behind the work. Watching Barry, who is disabled and queer, show up and tell the story of what is behind this stuff that they're making has just on many occasions stopped me in my tracks on Instagram and really moved me. I think Barry is a tremendous example of fully embodying creativity and humanity in the work they're producing. And I think that you are going to be really inspired by Barry's work. You can follow Barry at Barry Lee Art on Instagram. And I highly recommend it. Very powerful work. And I think you're going to love this conversation. Also, on our website, we actually have transcripts of all the new episodes going forward because of this conversation. And you'll hear a little bit more about that in just a second. Since you're such a powerful presence against ableism and you do so much advocacy, I just wanted to start by asking, what are the ways in which I can make this a better experience for you?
Absolutely. I appreciate you asking that because I think a lot of the struggle I continue to have is that I think a lot of artists and people who are quote unquote influencers in general are not taking simple steps to be accessible. One thing off the bat is to make sure that you have, you know, transcripts of your podcast available for everyone. Sometimes people, cannot hear the podcast, but also some people just don't like
That's true.
podcasts. And they, I meet people who don't like podcasts, and I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I love them, but I also know that people don't always have the capacity to sit down and listen. And so having that option creates such an opportunity to widen your audience. And something that I always talk about, and we can discuss this even further, is accessibility is the inclusion and making sure you're including everybody. Everybody. And we talk about inclusivity a lot. And yet, we can still sometimes forget disabled people. And I think the reason part of it is because we grow up in a society that doesn't even consider disabled people. So I think, in terms of podcast stuff, definitely making sure you have transcripts. And even in advertising your podcast on social media is making sure that when you are sharing your stories on your Instagram to have descriptive text. So maybe e either caption your stories or just have a general type out a general overview of the main bullet points that you touch on your stories. And I think that goes back to the notion too that not everyone has the time to turn on their volume on their phone.
Yeah, true. I was going to make the point that when you make it accessible to everybody, it actually probably serves everyone. It's not just for the people that need that.
Exactly. And a lot of times, some of the videos that I post, I hear from people who are from all over the world, and they say, I'm a non-English speaker, and these captions are the only ways that I can really connect with what you're saying, because this is how I'm learning English.
Yeah.
And that was something I didn't even think about.
I love that too, because I think obviously we're coming at this from a place of empathy and inclusion, but people are ignoring the fact that it's good marketing because you're allowing everybody that wants to access what you do access.
Absolutely. And I've had people, comment and say, well, I only have 200 followers. And I say, well, first of all, not every disabled person that follows you is going to ask you to post captions. Not every disabled person, you won't know. You may not ever know until you do it. And on top of that, making accessible content will increase the audience because they see your inclusivity.
When it comes to transcripts and then also captions, do you have tools or tricks or anything that have helped you do that?
Yeah, the app that I use is Mix Captions. I'm not sponsored by them. We're probably not going to get a sponsorship from them in this podcast. And there are still difficulties with transcripts. Something that I've been thinking about a lot is how social media is instant, but accessibility is not. And so it directly contradicts what we're doing, right? But also, we should be very mindful already of what we put up on our social media and how we present things. Accessibility helps us to become more mindful of what we post too. And sometimes, even for me, I do my best to proofread and mix captions and do all that. And then all of a sudden, I post a video, and then I realize that mix captions, I still didn't proofread it completely. So there's like an extra Z before a word. And all of that. And part of that scarcity of perfectionism in me is like, oh God, I gotta take this down. Oh gosh. And then I'm like, no, you know, I'm human. I, as a disabled person, mess up too. You know, like, just because I'm disabled does not mean that I am the professor of accessibility, you know, and, you know, there is room in the table for every disabled voice. There is a room in the table for every voice in general. And showing that side of humanity by messing up sometimes is just as important to show.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate that. And it's I hadn't even really considered transcripts as like that. That just seems like it seemed like to me a nice to have, something I'll get one day, but there are actually a few small things that I could do to make that happen. And yeah, I'm going to do that. That's really helpful. So I want to thanks for doing that. And if there's anything else that, any other way that I can make this experience really great, just let me know. Okay. The first question I want to ask you, I read that you grew up drawing as a means of distraction and it turned into a kind of therapy. And I totally relate to that as someone with ADHD. It's very therapeutic. It's a way of escaping boredom, which is, I don't think people know this, but that is the plague of ADHD. And I really appreciate that. But I also wonder, was there art that you consumed growing up, like someone else's art, that really transformed you or called you into being an artist?
Yeah. So back in time. So I grew up in the Outer Banks of North Carolina, a very small beach town near Virginia. And when I was born, with a very rare syndrome called Nager's syndrome. As soon as I was born, I was taken to the hospital to have surgery. So my whole childhood was filled with about 20 surgeries from birth until the age of 21. I really never was explained properly what that syndrome was until I was a teenager, and until I started to question why I had to go to all these doctor's appointments and all of that. And so on top of the doctor's appointments, I am deaf. I was born deaf. So around age 3, my dad and mom, for Christmas, got me like a little play school easel, and I was just hooked. I was like, there's a photo of me, and I'm just like me when I was 3, and with a little cast on my arm, and then the other little piece of chalk, and I'm just elated. And it was literally me sitting down in front of the television and drawing. And because I grew up in such a small town, I was not exposed to art. So the art that I was exposed to was the Muppets and Looney Tunes. So that is what I drew. I drew Sesame Street. I drew Bert all the time. I loved drawing Bert. there's just a bunch of drawings of Bert around. and like Bugs Bunny. And through those funnels, I learned about Jim Henson. I learned about Chuck Jones. I learned about animators and you know, creators. And that is art too, right? Like, ultimately it is. It wasn't really until high school where I discovered the work of Keith Haring, where I really started to resonate and understand that, oh, I can create work about my experience. And it resonated to me on the creating autobiographical work level. And it also awakened me to understanding that I am queer. So those intersections all built a very rich artistic language and upbringing. And, when you are navigating a bunch of surgeries and all of that, it can be, very lonely. And you are expected to be very strong, and so when I was drawing, I was able to really just, like you said, like not be bored, not be bored sitting in a doctor's office, not be bored having doctors examine me and study me. And so I would just be drawing all the time, everywhere, in the car, everywhere. It was just where I wanted to be.
I want to dive a little bit deeper into the Keith Haring thing, but I can't just skip over the Muppets because, as you know, we're both huge Muppet fans, huge Jim Henson fans. I do probably think he's probably my biggest artistic influence, and probably deepest influence, deepest catalyst to becoming a creative person. And I'm just curious if you have any sense of what resonated about the Muppets to you as a kid.
Well, I think part of it was the fact that the Muppets had four fingers like me.
Oh, did you think of that at the time?
Yeah, I was like, oh, like I really feel connected to this because I'm not alone. A Muppet interact with a guest star, a celebrity, and be like, oh, okay, yeah, there's other people like me.
Oh, that is
They might be
just
Muppets,
I love that so much. And actually, I felt very similar with Gonzo, just being such a weirdo. I felt very represented. And I also, you've gone through this process of owning what's different about you on several levels and owning it and being proud of it. And I feel like the Muppets to me really embodied neurodiversity and just diversity of just like everybody is very different. Their personalities are different. They look different, and they're all included, and they're all part of the team.
absolutely. And you can look at Sam and Friends, the first show Jim did, and you can see that immediately. It's like these bizarre, abstract characters. I mean, Kermit was just an abstract character. All of these things were influenced by jazz and abstractions of those concepts, and he never lost sight of that. Even to the point where he was like, I'm gonna make a show to stop war. Okay, Fraggle Rock. Like, okay, man.
It's amazing. What high hopes. And I feel like that depth. I feel like when you make something, you can only get a little of the depth that you intend to put in it. So why not intend huge depth? Because you're not going to get that in there. You're going to barely be successful at that. And so, but if you don't even start with huge depth, you don't have a chance.
Exactly. And in a lot of ways, he makes depth accessible through the work that he creates. And that is something that I try to do every day in my life with my work.
You definitely do, and I recognize that, and I want to get to that in a little bit. But I also want to just camp out on Keith Haring, and if I'd love to just hear you talk about how what it was like to discover Keith Haring, how that happened, and then what that story was like.
Totally. So I was a junior in high school and I was in AP Art. So if you're not familiar with the systems of AP Art, you're supposed to create a body of work and all of that. And so the first half of the semester, quarter, whatever system we were in, was about research, was about, finding different things. And through research, I learned about Basquiat, and then that led to Keith Haring. And I was like, oh my God. Because I was still like drawing very cartoony things. And this was work that was personal, subliminal, yet approachable. So I wouldn't know at first that one of his pieces would have greater meaning besides just the aesthetic. And when I learned about the intention behind the work that he did, I was like, oh, okay, this is like what I gotta do. And so I'd made a whole concentration about like controversial issues, which is such a 15-year-old thing to do when you're in a small town and you just don't know like who you are, and or you're very much questioning who you are. And then in my senior year, I was just out of a failed surgery, and I was feeling really frustrated. And that was around the time that I really questioned and asked my parents, like, why do I have to do this? Because at that time, like, I had braces on my teeth since age 9. And so when you're a teenager and you're going through puberty, like, I don't want these braces on me. Like, come on. So the more I learned about that and learned about the syndrome that I had, the more I wanted to channel that through art. And I was like, oh, like Keith Haring. Okay. And that body of work was really inspired by Salvador Dali, because I was like really depressed and really, in these dark feelings. But they did, catapult from Keith. And it showed me the power of individualism. And the power of pride.
Do you have an example of like a specific thing that he did that he put into his work, or that, where you realized? Was it in something he said or wrote about a piece? Is there any, does anything strike you for that?
I think I really noticed it when I started to research the work that he did when he was diagnosed with AIDS. Because that was a real turning point in his own art, and it was much more darker, but still like there were hints of this cheerfulness and playfulness. And it was explicit, and it was radical, and it was not art that I was surrounded by. Like growing up in a small beach town, the art that you're surrounded by is lighthouses and birds and crabs and there's a market for that. There's a market for everything, right? And you discuss that all the time. But I knew that, I knew I wasn't going to do that. So I was like, what am I going to be? I'm going to be the antithesis of that. And that's what I did. And really seeing Keith's work just affirmed to me that I needed to do that.
And it reminds me of I don't know if with the algorithm, I have no idea when you could have posted this 3 years ago, but today I saw a mural that you did under a bridge. I don't know when you do you post that
I
today or in the
did
past
post
couple
it today.
days?
Yes.
Okay. And I read the caption, and I thought that you really described what these faces could mean, how you were intending them. And I thought it's a weird chicken and an egg thing. When you put that depth in there, it can be as much about making people feel that when they're experiencing the art, or the art can get the attention to the kind of article that you wrote about it. And so it can be kind of a, it does, it's not, it this is exactly what it is, or you're adding meaning later, but it's this it it's I'm very interested in art's ability to gain attention so that you can communicate something that they wouldn't have listened to any other way. And I'm struck by, I can see the parallel between what Haring did and how he put meaning into his work and what those symbols meant. And I'm very interested in that symbolism, because I think that the gap between the picture and the words, it's a huge gap. And trying to infuse that and make them the same thing is kind of a life's work.
It is. And that piece that you were referring to is a bridge that I did called Eyes on You. And I painted a bunch of these abstract, colorful faces, and things on this gigantic bridge in Atlanta, and they represent people who stare at me because of my facial disfigurement. Now with the pandemic, I don't go out anywhere, so I kind of don't have to worry about that right now, which is its own interesting thing to navigate. But there are many times where I get invasive questions about my looks, many times where I get stared at because of my facial disfigurement. And people either might try to hide it, and some people don't. I mean, really. I've had people come up to me and say, "Oh, I don't know what you have, but you should really go to an eye doctor and get your eyes fixed." I mean, this is one of many things that people have said to me.
Good Lord.
And so the bridge and some of my work, not all of it, really represents the feeling of being stared at and it being loud. So these colors are just, it's multicolorful. These figures tower over you. And the representation and the symbolism behind that is that they're all laughing at you and they're all staring at you. And when you are being stared at, when you're being laughed at, it feels like it's gigantic. It feels like it's loud. Even if other people don't see it, you see it. And that bridge has been interesting because you're right. Some people don't take the time to look at context, especially now with social media. Murals are now things to take photos in front of. And so I witness sometimes people taking photos in front of that bridge, and I'm like, y'all really did not look in the intention of this. I mean, okay. See very happy people doing like holding a beer, da 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 da, and that's fine. But it I have to take my ego out of it. Because once I put it out in the world, it's out, right? And so it's a balance of, do I want to carry a megaphone all the time? Or do I want to trust people enough to research it? And I've come to the place where I'm like, I want to trust people enough. And I've come to a place where I'm building an audience where more people are starting to wake up to the stories I'm telling. And I think another example of what you discuss is there about 2017 or 18, MailChimp asked me to design a Pride Parade campaign for Atlanta Pride Parade. And it was, corporations doing pride things can be very sticky, So I was like, the only way I'll do it is to talk to your employees and see what they want. I want to talk to your LGBTQIA plus employees and see what they want. So we set a full day of interview of me interviewing about 20 employees from the LGBTQIA plus community. And every single one of them was like, I don't want rainbows. I don't want rainbow flags. I'm tired of it. And I was like, perfect, great. I'm definitely not thinking that. And so, some of them were sharing. I asked a list of questions like, what is love to you? What would you tell your 16-year-old self? I asked these very personal questions to kind of gather data. And get to know these people. And so I came up with this in that I came up with this installation of heart balloons. And the message behind it is love is the message, which is a reference to a 1974 disco song which around 1973, 1974 was when disco was really starting to come into play. You know, more queer clubs and things like that were coming together underground. And so it was a homage to that. But it was a homage too to just love, you know, because ultimately that is the message of it. So there were some hearts that did not have wings, and then there were hearts with wings, and the hearts with wings, you know, let me backtrack. You know, you ever get to that point where you're like, oh, yes, okay.
Oh, yeah. All the time. That's my whole life. In fact, I feel like there must be an ADHD thing where I think I could be a good mystery novel writer because I write in reverse. Like all of my, it's always backwards. So yeah. Yeah. Too well. So feel free. Rewind.
So there are hearts with wings and there are hearts without wings. And the hearts without wings represent those who are not out yet. But to tell them that they are still loved no matter what part of the process that they're in. And then the hearts with wings represent those who are out. And that was a real moment of seeing that installation in person, and you know, the employees handed out stickers that I designed and all of that, and walking to Piedmont Park in Atlanta and just seeing so many people that I did not know and that did not know me just wearing these stickers and loving each other and having community. And that's what I love to create, is experiences like that, is like the bridge, is like the Pride Parade installation. These things that hold intention but can also be just enjoyed.
I'm super pumped to have Shillington as a sponsor because they are the real deal. They churn out legit graphic designers who get their hands dirty, really know the programs and know how to be an actual graphic designer, not just theoretically. And in the spirit of that, I thought, why don't we just get some of their instructors to come in and share a little of their knowledge. So here's one of their instructors, Shanti Sparrow. I needed this reminder. Maybe you do too.
Learning how to say no has had a huge impact on my creative practice. When you start out, it's common to say yes to everything. Over time, I have chosen to only work with people and projects that I connect with. Being upfront that a project will only be taken on if values align leads to an equal partnership with the client and an enjoyable creative experience.
Seriously, go follow Shanti Sparrow, Shanti_Sparrow on Instagram. Her work is freaking sweet. And those are the kind of people teaching at Shillington. Go to shillo.design/pep and become a graphic designer. Remember that course on poetic writing from Hanif Abdur-Raqib that I was telling you about on Skillshare? Don't just take my word for it. Check this review out. And Diane says, an incredible teacher with insights I haven't seen anywhere else. I love fresh insights. I felt so inspired after this class and the writing just flowed through my fingertips. That's how I liked that when writing feels right. Go learn from Hanif, skillshare.com/creativepep, and get more poetic in your writing. 2 free weeks of Skillshare. Take the class now. Hey, if things are feeling stale, upgrade your online content with some fresh video and audio from Storyblocks. They have affordable subscriptions, unlimited downloads through the unlimited all-access plan, and royalty-free, demand-driven library. We've used Storyblocks to great effect, having a blast. It just keeps things fresh. Go to storyblocks.com/creativepeptalk to learn more. I want to rewind for a second back to the bridge because this is such a, I've been thinking a lot about, I hate this term so much, so I apologize before I say it, but I'm thinking about, I'm always right now, I'm in a place in my career where I'm not personally thinking about marketing all the time. There was a time where that was a big, like I was looking to break in a bigger way. And I spent a bunch of time, and everything I learned in that time, I translated and used in the art world. And then I made a lot of that into the podcast. But at this point, that's not been the season I'm in. And so every once in a while, I try to dive back in there too, partially because it can be fun, just like a challenge to grow things, but also to speak into people that are in that place right then. Anyway, huge, huge preface to say, I'm about to say the word funnel. I hate that word. I hate it, but I've been noticing this parallel between, they call a funnel in marketing. It's the customer journey. And I see the same thing happen in creativity, and it's not just in art. It's not just about making money. It's also about getting a message to somebody. And I thought it was so interesting when I looked at the mural that you painted under or that you designed under the bridge. My first impression, and this is the top of the funnel. This is where the first awareness of a thing. My first impression was, this is a happy mural. This people are laughing and having a good time, and it's a celebration of all good things. And then when I start reading, it was a powerful experience. I have to tell you, Barry, because then I read your caption about these are people laughing at you, laughing at people, and I looked back at it. The mural changed. It was a different mural. Now, the thing is, though, when we first started talking, I didn't read your captions. Lots of people don't, right? Like, that's the bottom of the funnel. And I think one of the things that you said was about being comfortable letting people go through that journey. And I think that's the key. And it reminds me, funnily enough, I think it's called Swimming Pools by Kendrick Lamar. I could be wrong about this. This could be the wrong interpretation. But when you listen to that song the first time, you're like, this is about getting effed up. This is a song celebrating the club and drinking and all that. And I feel like he had to be comfortable thinking 90% of people that hear the song, that's what they're going to think it is. But then if they take another layer down, they're like, oh, this is kind of the dark side of drinking. This is, and I feel like the artists that are the most powerful get comfortable with being misinterpreted.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, that's still a process I'm working through. That is a process that I only now am coming to terms with. And part of that is me knowing that my message is consistent. So, when you say that is partially why I create videos, right? Because this was a segue to me saying, okay, not everyone is going to read a caption. Well, how about we just do a video? And the videos allow me to connect to my audience and vice versa. And when I started to notice that was when I started to really notice my audience really looking for the intention behind things, because I consistently presented them with challenges with all of that. Yeah. I think about the quote, I need to look it up. I think about the quote by James Baldwin that says, the role of the artist is exactly the same as the role of the lover. If I love you, I have to make you conscious of the things you don't see. And when I saw that quote for the first time, I was like, oh my God, this is me. This is how I feel about my work. This is how I feel about what I want to do, And two, the start of that funnel is the spoonful of sugar. And as you go down, that makes the medicine go down. The medicine being hard information, but the spoonful of sugar being the colors, the cute characters.
Yeah, I love that. It also reminds me, one of my all-time favorite quotes is Paul Klee said, art does not reproduce the visible, rather it makes visible. And I feel like, yeah, I love that so much. Okay, so let's switch gears a little bit. I wondered, when you're getting started, before you ever get any jobs and you get kind of where you are now doing what you're doing, what were the early obstacles?
Did you go to school?
Yeah, so I went to art school and went, graduated illustration degree, and I worked like retail for a bit, as we all do, as we all have to do something like that. And there have been many moments in my life where I have pivoted, but I have been steered back to my art every single time. I started to do art shows after college. I started to do some solo art shows in a coffee store. And the second art show that I did was a series of illustrations based on my childhood. It's called Home is Where You Drown, which is in reference to the beach town. And I shared a lot of like whimsical illustrations, but I also painted a mural that is actually the launching pad of the mural that we discussed in the bridge. Just smaller figures staring at you. But the fact that this was in another public space, this was in a coffee shop, this is where I was being stared at all the time. In coffee stores, you know? So because of that mural that I did, and I just volunteered to do it, you know, because that was a part of the show. And then the coffee shop was like, we would love to keep it. I was like, great. And from there was when I started to get more commissions, because it was in a coffee spot. It was in one of the best spaces in town. And I started to get more mural commissions. And I enjoyed it, but a lot of those murals too were not intentional, you know, they were not rooted in intention. And so I had to ask myself, how can I work with clients and be intentional at the same time? How can I make, for me, it's so fun to really deep dive with clients, to really like take the time and energy to create something that they're going to really love, because they're the ones that have to see this every day. I'm not. And so there should be intention behind the work. And there were many instances in my early part of my career where I almost fell into traps. So, for example, there was a company that approached me to do a mural and design a bunch of illustrations and things like that for them. And they told me, they said, you are against two other people, which I'm not a fan of that. I'm not a fan of when clients tell me that there's two other people in line for this as well. So buck up, chap, you know, like I'm not a fan of that. I'm not some, yeah. For me, it's like everyone has room in the table, and you like my work, you like it. You don't, that's fine too. You know, like there are plenty of people out there that I'm like, I'm not a fan of their work. Okay. That's that. But the project was going to consist of a lot of work. And so I send this quote, and I was like 23 or 22. And I send this quote that was the largest quote I've ever sent in my life, still to this day. And they were like, okay, they chose you. And I was like, oh, cool, okay. So I go and I begin to do this work, and they're like, okay, we're going to go pitch this to our client. It was an agency that was doing all this. Uh-huh. And they said, we're going to call you at 12. So 12 o'clock rolls by, I don't get a call. 4 o'clock rolls by, I don't get a call. about 6 o'clock, I get a call and they're like, hey, they decided to go with someone safer. And I was like, okay. So I sent them a quote for the work that I did, and thank goodness they paid it. Which, by the way, make sure that you have a cancel fee. Y'all, that's very important. So I was really upset. But then I got a text from a friend who said, hey, go check this out. So they sent me a link to a news article that says mural causes disturbance in neighborhood. And it was the mural that I was going to do. So it turns out that the purpose of the mural, the reason why they did, they hired people to do the mural was to look like they were supporting something when they really were not supporting it at all. They were harming it. They were harming things that they supposedly were supporting. I'm being very vague here because...
I get it. Yeah. It's almost like a cover-up. It's almost like someone saying... Yeah, yeah.
So they had all over the neighborhood... It's comical. They had all over the neighborhood these things that mocked the mural. All the people that angry neighbors did. So they were drawing things that mocked the mural and they were throwing paint at it and they were destroying it. What? And that moment for me was like, oh, I need to be very intentional about who I work for. The money will come, but what matters is that it aligns with my values and my morals, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good lesson. One of the things that you have said, you've kind of mentioned this a few times. Earlier you said that social media is instant, but accessibility is not. And you've said maybe once or twice on top of that, taking time. And I feel like intentionality, taking time, these seem like huge values to you. And they, how does that manifest in your creative practice? Because I do think, and it's very inspiring to me because I feel, you know, recently I told you I was diving back in the marketing world, kind of like, oh God, here I go. I'm going to go back in there. And I always translate it. And you really got to, you know, you got to brace yourself because it's not a great world to spend a ton of time in, honestly. But I think there's genuine things. There's good things. There's, you know, being persuasive to others to persuade them into good things. That's a great way to market like that. And you need those tricks, right? And you need the tools. How do you connect with people? But one of the things that happens when I dive in that world is I get seduced to, you know, I was listening to go faster. Faster, faster. You know, I was listening to one person who built this Instagram following and, you know, they're posting 5 or 6 times a day. And there's, but you get, it's so easy. You know, people watch The Social Dilemma. You know, people are aware of the world is desperately begging you to go faster. I think especially creativity is almost always I often feel like creativity is the anti-productivity in a way. And so I wonder what practices or how that manifests, or if you could just speak to taking your time.
I think a lot of us artists are in this hustle culture. And I'm very anti-hustle culture.
Yeah.
And sometimes I feel like that hustle culture has been ingrained in us due to the fear that we carry that we're not going to get more work after what we're doing. Versus trust in our own path. Versus genuine trust.
Yeah.
For me, it took me a while to dismantle that need. And it was interesting because only recently my following has really started to grow and be consistent. And there are many times where I feel pressure to show up all the time. When I just don't have the capacity. I really don't. I want to be able to enjoy creating work. And I think sometimes, like, this hustle culture prevents us from truly enjoying the process. How are you going to enjoy the fruits of your labor if you're rushing in the parts of your labor? You have to enjoy the process as well. So for me, that is a very strict meditation practice. And so every morning I meditate. I am working on right now not turning my phone on first thing in the morning. I locked my phone up for 2 hours at the start of my day. So maybe that means that I make a drawing on my iPad and enjoy a coffee with that. And when I have access to my phone, I have to watch myself sometimes because I'm like, oh, I love what I'm drawing. I'm going to post it today, right now. And I'm like, no, this can wait, you know? And every time that I have waited to post certain things and gotten the sort of ping from the universe to say, okay, you can post this now. Every time I have somebody comment and say, I really needed this today, it's the resonance, you know? And I love that mystery of it, you know? It's just like, that is why. It's the trust of knowing that your audience will always be there and appreciate what you do.
That man, that is my jam. I love that. I don't do that exact practice, but it's close. I do some things like that. Now I'm going to do that. That I love that so much. I have one more question, and it's you talked about Keith Haring and all the ways that he influenced what you do. And I wonder, as you've kind of, by kind of your words, stepped into, you're starting to step into your own, you feel like. How do you want to give what he gave you? But then also, how do you want to give something different or more than that through your creativity? What do you want to do that how do you want to pick up the torch, I guess?
Well, I think first of all, we carry our own individual torches that are built by influence of others. It's interesting because I was actually watching PBS just released a documentary about Keith Haring. It's only an hour long. I really suggest it. And you know, he died very young of AIDS. And I remember watching toward the end and them talking about his last years of his life, and he was just like going, 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 like nonstop. And I remember seeing an interview with his friend that was just like, I kept trying to tell him he needed to rest. So for me, I want to encourage people through my work to be mindful and really be human. To breathe. To breathe and to be very conscious and be good listeners and to love wholly and not on a surface level. So I want to be like anti-hustle culture, right? Like I want to be able to encourage mindfulness, encourage all of that through my work. Whether that is accessibility or sharing parts of my process or posting videos that talk about it or asking questions that make people think more. The other day I posted a question that has been running in my mind, and it asked, you know, some of my followers, I'm like, do you follow people for the sake of genuinely loving what people do, or are you following them out of fear that they are your competition to only keep tabs on? Because I notice that sometimes with artists too, it's like they're vul people can be vultures, and I'm like, this is just useless. Like, I don't have time to talk crap about people I don't like.
Right, man. Yes.
So I just want to facilitate that more.
Well, I cannot add to that. That was the I love what you said, and I think that you're doing that. The work, I love your work. I love those questions you posted the other day, and I really loved the pride balloons that you made. Are every time I think of your work, I'm like, man, those are so cool, and I love them. They're fantastic. Barry, thank you for doing this. This was a gift. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, Andy. Thank you for having me.
Massive shout out to Barry for coming on the show and sharing so much heart and humanity and inspiration. Love your work, Barry. Thanks for doing what you do. Go follow Barry on Instagram at Barry Lee Art. You will be pumped every time one of his pieces or videos shows up in your feed. It's going to bring you heart, humanity, and some life and just fun. Barry's work is super fun. Thanks, Barry, for being on the show. Super, super appreciate all you're doing in the world. Creative Pep Talk is part of the Koloop Podcast Network. Koloop is a network of creative podcasts designed to fuel your creativity. Make sure you never miss an episode. Sign up to our newsletter at creativepeptalk.com/newsletter. You'll receive an email each week when a new episode drops. And guess what? Here's the thing. I designed this podcast to fill you up with new ideas so that you have fresh hope and excitement for your creative practice so that you can put another week into the can, into the another week of effort to push your creative career forward that much. Learn from the turtle, man, the tortoise. It's just slow and steady, okay? So you string enough of those weeks together, you're going to get somewhere interesting. How do you do it? By staying pepped up each and every week. How do you do that? Sign up to the newsletter, creativepeptalk.com/newsletter. Thanks to Yoni Wolf and the band Y for our theme music. Shout out to Alex Sugg for our Creative Pep Talk soundtrack. Thanks to Sophie Pizza and Ryan Appleton for content assistance. Massive thanks to Jordan Aaron for editing this show so beautifully. And this is the last episode that Jordan Aaron is editing. We love you, Jordan. Working with you has been a breeze, and you do phenomenal work. We hate to see you go, but we are excited for you leveling up your creative practice. I always love when team members do that. I just love it. It makes me so happy. So I'm super happy for you, man. Thank you for editing the show. Until we speak again, stay pepped up.